Okay, like I said, my name is Brandon and I'm an alcoholic. And that's probably one of the truest statements that's ever come out of my mouth, because, you know, in my act of alcoholism, when I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking or finding ways to get drunk. You know, I've gone to jail and I find ways to get drunk in jail. And, you know, through coming to these rooms, I was able to identify myself as an alcoholic. I figured I disliked drinking a lot, you know, so I'd go to any lengths to get drunk. And, you know, this is my first trip into this program, and I hope that it's my last, you know, since July 24th of 2008, I haven't had to have a drink, and if I keep doing what I've done throughout that time, then I won't have to drink ever again. But I can only do that for today. You know, I was told when I first got in here, if I have 1 foot in yesterday and 1 foot in tomorrow, then I'm pissing on today. And, you know, for me, you know, and all this stuff that I'm going to tell you guys today, this isn't something that my brilliant mind came up with. This is all things that I've heard from people in these rooms. You know, I'm teachable today as opposed to when I was drinking, because, you know, I knew everything when I was drinking. You couldn't tell me that the sky was blue, because I'd argue with that. And, you know, I basically have the same alcoholic story, the drunk log that everyone else does. Grew up around drinking, got kicked out of school for drinking. By the grace of God, finished school. Had a son when I was 16 years old. I got a baby on the way. And you know, but today things are a lot better. You know, I work two jobs. I'm accountable. I'm dependable at my jobs, as opposed to when I was drinking. Because, you know, when I was drinking, I was always late, or I'd always have to leave early, or I just didn't show up, or I showed up drunk. And, you know, basically, the reason I live a good life today is because of this program and the suggestions that I've taken. You know, I heard when I got here that I needed a sponsor, so within the first month or so, I had a sponsor. And then I heard that you don't just have a sponsor, you got to do work with them. So, you know, I did some work with my sponsor. And at first I kind of had some fears of the 12 steps, because, you know, I kind of ran the streets quite a bit. So I figured, you know, I was going to be like this Gandhi guy. Like, you know, I was going to be soft and I didn't want to do none of that, you know. And, you know, it didn't really appeal to me. But, you know, you drown in your own misery long enough. For me, anyways, you know, I wanted to get out of that. So, and I heard that the way to do that was by working the 12 steps. So, you know, I started doing that. And, you know, I didn't do anything special. I did it straight out of the book. That's how my sponsor told me to do it. So that's how I did it. And, you know, I've read the book. I'm of service to others. Like, today, this was an unexpected thing. I just planned to come up here and serve eggs to everybody. But, you know, things happen, you know. I've been told by someone else, you know, make your plans and show them to God and or watch them laugh at you. So, you know, the thing that I've clung to or really stuck to in my sobriety was I go to meetings. I go to a lot of meetings. You know, I've been going to anywhere from 4 to 7 meetings the entire time I've been in here. And that helps me, because, you know, when I start isolating and being by myself, and I start thinking, and when I start thinking, things go wrong. I don't know why that is. You know, when I was drunk, I was never wrong, so I don't see how I think it could be all wrong. you know, and I haven't done this program perfect. The only thing I've done perfect is I haven't drank, and I worked the steps, but by far they're not perfect. you know, I haven't had to go to jail. I haven't had to have my family look at me with that, you know, that disappointment. And, you know, they got over being mad at me, because, you know, they just knew I was going to mess up anyways, but there was always that disappointment. And I haven't had to deal with none of that. You know, I have alcoholics that are in my family still. Well, drunks anyways. It's up to them to decide if they're alcoholics. That's what I've learned here. And, you know, because of this program, I could go anywhere today, do whatever I want, and I don't have to worry about whether I'm going to drink or not. Because, you know, through my conscious contact with my higher power, 12 steps, my sponsor, and people in these rooms, you know, I've learned to be recovering alcoholic, you know, and I don't have to drink. You know, I've been to a couple bars since I've been sober, which probably isn't, I don't suggest, you know. I wouldn't suggest people take the route that I took to get here, because, you know, it says there's no dues or fees for AA membership. Well, for me to be up here, I paid a pretty heavy price. You know, I went through a lot of things to get here. And, you know, if you guys can get here after your first drink, you know, do that, because you don't want to, you know, I hear a couple old-timers tell me, oh, I spilled more alcohol than you ever drank, you little youngster, because, you know, I'm only 21 years old, and, but, you know, I had enough. I had been drinking from the time I was about 10 years old, and after about 11 or 12, it didn't stop. And, you know, I hit my own bottom, and I decided that it was time for me to shape up. And I didn't get here on my own will. You know, I went to jail, and I had these two counselors, and, you know, and, they just jammed recovery down my throat, and, you know, I didn't want to hear it at first, and, but they didn't give up on me, you know, and, you know, I hear from my sponsor all the time, be vigilant, and, you know, and I took that into consideration for a while, and, you know, finally, I'm able to start working with some vigilance, and it's paying off, because, you know what, you know, you talk about the serenity, and we will know peace. Well, I know peace more than I know that big old shitstorm. You know, I'm able to go through most of my day and have a pretty good day. You know, when I choose to have a bad day, because sometimes, you know, I like to be pissed off and stuff, then I have a bad day, you know. And what I've learned here is it's all based on how I want to be that day. You know, I say a prayer pretty much every night, and it's, God, I may not be where I want to be, but at least I'm not where I used to be. Because, you know, me being human, I always want more. Me being an alcoholic, I always want more. You know, I want the best of the best and the worst of the worst, just so I can say I have it all. And, you know, and that's how my mind works, you know. It's broke, so. You know, what can I say? I can't sugarcoat it. It's broke. And, you know, so I do the best I can. I take the suggestions that I feel will work for me, and I use them in my daily life. And, you know, through the 12 steps and everything, the thing that I've learned is that's not just for me to come in these rooms and be spiritual while I'm here for an hour and a half or 2 hours or however long. You know, the 12 step says in all our affairs. And that's not always an easy thing for me to do, because I could come in here and someone in here could piss me off, but I'll forgive them because they're an alcoholic. But I go out there and someone pisses me off, and you SOB, I'm going to kick your ass, you know, stuff like that. And it's a lot easier to, you know, just let things go in here. But out in the real world is where I have a problem, because I have a living problem. And, you know, through the 12 steps and the people here, I learned to live. And before, I didn't know how to live. You know, it was about numbing my feelings, passing out so I wouldn't have to deal with anything. And today it's not like that. I deal with life. And so far, you know, I've done a pretty good job compared to what I was doing. I mean, I don't want to say that, you know, I'm a saint, because I'm not. I'm definitely a sinner. And but you know what? I'm able to work on that today. I'm not nearly as bad as I was before, but then again, I'm probably not as good as I'll be tomorrow. And, you know, for me, I never like to say that I'm doing good, because in my sick, broken mind, I'll start thinking, oh, well, I'm doing good, so I don't need to do no work. I'm doing pretty good, so I'm just going to stay where I'm at, and I get stagnant. And I don't want to do the things that are suggested. I don't want to work any steps. I don't want to use those principles in all my affairs, because I'm doing good. So for me, I continue to look at my life and know that I need progress, because once I get at that stagnant point, then everything starts going real bad. And, you know, compared to where I was, all I want to do is move forward, because I was at a point, you know, I used to look around and see the, you know, the hobos and drinking the Thunderbird around a fire, and I'd be like, I'm never going to do that. Well, sure as shit, I had a fire going in my front yard and I was drinking the big boy Thunderbird, you know? And I mean, you know, and there's always those yets. I haven't crashed the car yet. You know, I haven't, well, never mind, I made homemade alcohol to get drunk. You know, And, you know, I heard someone say at a meeting that an old timer used to tell him, I used to lay in the gutter and look down on all you people. And, you know, I can identify with that because I was a pissed, pants, puking drunk. And I looked down on everyone else, you know, and it's like, well, I'm way above you, you know. And, you know, today I could practice humility and I could feel empathy for the alcoholic who still suffers. And, you know, and it's so much easier for me to feel empathy for someone who is like me. But those other people out there, nah. You know, it's hard. And, I do try, though, because, you know, there's plenty of times where at work I would have loved to just slap my boss around, but I haven't done it. And, you know, and that's one other thing I've learned is a thought is a thought. As long as I don't put it into action, then I'm all right. Because my thoughts kind of sick sometimes, you know. I don't know if any of you guys could relate to that, but, you know, so I'm just going to keep being vigilant in my program. And another thing, too, is without gratitude, I cannot have a program. Because if I'm not grateful for what I have, then I'm sure to go back to where I was. And that's the message that I like to relay, is that gratitude, for me, is the key to my program. You know, I cannot work a program without it because, you know, I mean, when I start getting in those crappy moments, all I got to do is look around me, and that could bring me out of that crappy moment real quick. Because, I mean, you know, I got 2 jobs. My girlfriend's still with me. I got a baby on the way. I got a 4.5-year-old son. You know, I got a car. Before I was walking to meetings, for the first 112 days I was out, I couldn't find a job, and I went to 2-3 meetings a day. And I walked to those meetings. I live out on the west side, and I was out here at the 12-step club. You know, and that was my pride and ego. Oh, I'm not going to call for a ride. I'm just going to walk out there and, you know, get there on my own. You know, and, but, you know, there's a thing. When I took the suggestions that were given to me, my life started to change. And it's changed for the better. And so, you know, why am I going to stop doing what I'm doing? You know, things are going good. And, you know, I'm not riding the pink cloud because there's still stuff going on around me. But, you know, through the program, I've learned to be calm throughout the storm. And that's about it. My name is Brendan. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, now I'd like to introduce the main speaker. And it's Tim W. from Santa Barbara.
We'll let them all get in here because we wouldn't want them to miss any of this. My name's Tim Whitcomb. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be sober today. Glad to be here. I want to thank Julie for asking me to come up and participate in your meeting. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The thing you have to realize is that Julie has heard me speak before and asked me to come anyway. So kind of has to make you wonder what's wrong with Julie. You know, for some reason it puts me in the mind of 2 sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous who were on death row. They were paying for what they'd done, but working a program, but paying the price for the wreckage of their past. And as the time approached for their sentence to be carried out, the warden came to them and told them that he was impressed by what he'd seen them do with their lives, and that if it was within his powers to grant them one last wish, he'd be happy to do that. And the first man said, "Warden, I'd like to have the opportunity to tell my story one more time in the hope that it might help someone else." And the warden said, "I'll see what I can do." And the second man said, "Warden, I'd like you to execute me immediately. Because if I have to listen to that son of a bitch tell that story one more time..." So any of you who were here a couple of years ago for this sad old tale of woe, I apologize, and I'll get through it as quick as possible. Nobody ever got mad at me for stopping early, I can tell you that. So, you know, I don't have a set pitch that I do, so I'm... I'm never sure what I'm going to say when I get up here. I pray ahead of time, and then I just get up and start talking, and when the time's up, I quit talking. I can guarantee you this much, that the talk I give here this morning will not be nearly as good as the one I gave in the shower getting ready to come over here. That one was crisp, and I wish several of you could have been there for it, you know. Now, you'll notice I wasn't looking at anybody when I said that, you know. I made that mistake one time. It's an old joke I've used many times, just trying to get comfortable up here, but I delivered that line one time and realized I was staring right into somebody's eyes when I said it, and I'm pretty sure I made that guy nervous, you know. He was new and wondering what he'd gotten himself into. But I drove up yesterday from Santa Barbara. I've had this cold thing, so I wasn't feeling all that great. And but the thing that has struck me last night, I went and had dinner with this group of people, Julie and a bunch of the guys from this area, and also again this morning driving up here from Porterville. Was, you know, we live in a great country. We live in a wonderful country. And we are blessed to live where we do. We're blessed to have the freedoms that we do. We're blessed to be able to gather this way together with a solution for a common ailment. You know, it's just, you got to understand, you know, I tear up at Andy and Mayberry, so I'm kind of a big goober, but I really was, I've just been touched since I've been up here, driving up here to this morning, and seeing people, you know, people were going to church, and out and about doing their Sunday morning thing, and I knew I was going to a meeting of sober alcoholics, that we were going to get together, and I would hear exactly what I heard when I walked in, and that's that language of the heart, and that the laughter that we share. You know, I walked into that restaurant last night, and there was no doubt which table I was headed for. You know, bunch of goofballs, you know, and you know, I walked in the front door a while ago, and somebody's, yeah, restrain of pen and tongue, and we've got this common language, we've got this common solution that we can depend on, and we can join together in this brotherly and harmonious action to save our lives. And what a blessed opportunity. There are still places in the world where they're not granted that privilege, where it's a matter of some shame to admit to alcoholism, where people are looked down upon and kept from having meetings because of political beliefs. Or I was just in Cuba, my wife and I, and we went with a group of people. The guy had a license, so it was a legal trip. We flew out of Miami, spent a week down there. Interesting country. That system they have doesn't work, and they know it. But we found an AA meeting, and it was just so great. It ended up, there was three guys from our group went, and five Cuban guys showed up, and one of their group had enough English and one of our group had enough Spanish that we made it all work. And the guy who led the meeting and qualified, you know, the first share, about halfway through his share, I thought, geez, I could be sitting in, you know, Porterville or Santa Barbara or Missouri or many places I've gone to AA meetings, because it's the same story. He said, He came to AA and he quit drinking, but he didn't work the steps, and he got involved in making money, and he was miserable, and he wasn't drinking, and he was unhappy, and he did that for a while, and then finally he was going to drink or go nuts or kill somebody or do something, and he thought, well, the one thing he hadn't tried is he hadn't gotten a sponsor and worked the steps yet, so he tried that before he did these other things, and lo and behold, all of a sudden his life got better. And I thought, geez, you know, I've heard that story in various forms all over this country and all over the world now. You know, I've heard it in New Zealand, and I heard it in Thailand, heard it in England. My wife and I went to a meeting in London that London taxi cab drivers train for years to know where they're going. And we gave this guy this address, and he almost got lost. I mean, he did find us the place, but it was very unusual. And he's like, well, here, finally, this is it. And, very unlikely looking place. But we got out of the cab, and we started walking up, and we see this group of people standing in the distance, and this guy spots us and comes running over, and he says, "Are you here for the AA? Are you here for the AA?" It's like, "Yeah. Well, we're going to have the meeting. But somebody locked the door, and they weren't supposed to, and we don't have the key, but we sent so-and-so to get the key, but we're going to have the meeting. And as soon as we can get in," and then they're messing around, and then finally they decide, "Well, maybe we should put Shorty through the window." You know, and I go over and look at this window, and the inside there's about a 15-foot straight-down drop. And they got this guy picked up, and they got him stuck in there head first. And I'm like, "Don't put Shorty through the window. You know, you're going to kill this guy." Fortunately, it wasn't big enough for him to get through. What we ended up doing was we found it was starting to mist. As you know, it rains a lot in London, and it was starting to mist and get cold and wet. We found some cardboard boxes, and there was an overhang, and a group of us got together, and we sat on the cardboard boxes and crates that we found, and circled up and had our meeting. And they asked me if I'd like to lead it. And of course I would. And I talked a bit about my experience, and I talked about hospital and institution. And my wife was sitting next to me, and I called on her, and she said, let these other guys go first. So the guy passed her, shared, and he'd been in an institution, and someone from the United States had brought an AA meeting in over there, and that was in the Air Force, and that's where he'd first heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the next guy shared, and he'd been in an institution, and somebody had from hospital and institution had brought a meeting in there. There were nine of them, and my wife and I, 11 of us, there were nine of them, and everyone in that group had been touched in some way by hospital and institution. They either got it in the joint, or in the nut house, or in the hospital. And by the time we got back to my wife, she was like this. It was just, what a great experience that was. So, I used to drink. I drank a lot. I'm, by God's amazing grace and the proven power of our 12 steps, I'm sober now since January the 3rd, 1983. I'm very grateful for that. Just had my 27th AA birthday. I was too sick to go to my home group and take my cake, but I'll get them next week. My home group is men who have lost their legs. We meet on Thursday nights at the Veterans Memorial Building in Santa Barbara, and any of the men in this room would be welcome to join us 8 o'clock on Thursdays at the Vets. Big group of guys, a lot of young guys, which is always great to see. And Brendan, wherever you are, the next time one of those old guys says, "I spilled more than you drank," tell them they shouldn't have spilled so damn much. Maybe they got here sooner, that stuff's for drinking, not spilling, you know. Something morally wrong about that. But we have a great young group in Santa Barbara that, you know, I sponsor a guy who got sober when he was 16 years old. He's got almost 10 years now. And they're on fire down there. And they, you know, they can talk to each other in a way that, I mean, it's not like I can't talk with them, but, you know, I'm old. And they look at me and go, dude, if I was your age, I'd quit drinking too, you know. But when they can hear it from each other, then there's something magic in that. So it's great to see the young people come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if I had one of the things I've formed an opinion about is every once in a while you'll hear somebody get up at a podium and say, "Oh, isn't it good to see young people here? Stick around. You may not have to go through the things some of us did. Let us love you until you can learn to love yourself." You know, it always sounds so condescending to me. But having said that, let me say this: it's really good to see young people here. Stick around. You may not have to go through the things some of us did. Let us love you until you can learn to love yourself. It's not about the amounts we drank. It's not about what it was we drank. It's the way we drank. It's alcoholism. You can stop it at 16 just as well as you can at 65. I am of the opinion, I have a stepson, he's been up here to talk to you. His name's Noah. He's one of those on fire young guys. He got sober when he was 19 years old. And he and I discuss it a lot. And you know, my opinion is, one of the things he tells me is, he says, "Tim, I don't have a story like yours. You know, I wasn't in prison and I didn't live on the streets and I didn't do a lot of the things you did. So I had to really look at the literature closely to understand my disease and take my information out of the book and see where I could go, understand that I could end up like you ended up." And what that tells me is that these kids that are getting it nowadays, they're still smart enough to realize that some of them are short-stopping years and years of misery for themselves by getting it now. So they shouldn't have spilled so much. They would have got here sooner, you know. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, Southern California. And long before I ever took a drink of alcohol, I can remember standing on the schoolyard in Cohasset Street Elementary School, Van Nuys, California, and I'm with my little crew. One of them says, "Hey man, try this. Squat down, take a bunch of deep breaths, stand up and blow on your thumbs." I said, "Why? What's going to happen?" He said, "Just try it. You'll find out." Well, this was to establish a pattern in my life, this whole "just try it, you'll find out" thing, you know. But I did it, and I passed out, because that's what happens when you do that. You hyperventilate. I came to, I'm laying on the blacktop, the world's spinning, I'm all flushed and disoriented, and I went, "Wow, cool." Everybody else in the group did it, and then they all ran off to play dodgeball. I stayed there and did it 8 or 10 more times, you know. It's like, hey, if it's good, let's do it. I didn't like alcohol in the beginning. I didn't like the taste of it. I had access to it. So I began my abuse of things with outside issues, which is what I believe how they refer to heroin and, you know, marijuana and all those things now. But I started out taking a lot of drugs, but I quickly learned how to drink, especially when I got a hold of that speed. You know, "Oh, I like this because now I can drink." When I was 19 years old, I went to the penitentiary for second-degree murder, a crime that I committed while under the influence of alcohol and narcotics. I had an A number in this state, if that means anything to anybody. And I'm happy to tell you that I've been out of prison so long now, they let me go back in. You know? And I've had a panel at a place called CMC East for a number of years. It's a level 3 yard, and most of the guys are lifers. I also go into the United States Penitentiary at Lompoc. And there's no greater... the best thing I get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get to do a lot of stuff, is to go into these institutions and carry the message of AA and to learn. You know, when I started going in, I thought, oh, I'm going to need to teach these guys something. And I found out that I go because they teach me. And I can remember going in with the panel of people I was with to one meeting, guy got up named Angel, and he'd just been denied parole again for 2 years, and he was kind of boo-hooing about it a little, understandably. You know, he'd been in a long time, and he's going to do at least two more. He got done, and the next convict to get up said, "My name's Andy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm doing life without the possibility of parole. And what I find it necessary to do is practice the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life so that I can live comfortably no matter where I am and what I'm doing." And I went, phew. I turned to the people I was with and said, "Hey, we can go home now. You know, I mean, I've heard everything I need to hear." But, you know, I never drew a sober breath when I was in prison if I could help it. As Brendan mentioned, we made our own wine, and you know, we smuggled drugs in. And I was inside in the 60s, and they were doing a lot of better living through chemistry anyway. They were giving us a lot of stuff to try and alter our moods and behaviors. And so, you know, I'd take my meds and I'd take your meds and see how those went together. And then we get a little something off the street in and mix that in and put that in the mix and then drink some of that, you know, rot gut wine. But, I still remember. Hospital and institution work isn't for everyone, but for those of us who do it, we love it. We love it a lot. And if you're new and you're looking for something to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would suggest you give it a try. It's as I say, it's the best thing I do because I get to have these wonderful experiences. You know, I was at CMC one night, there's a convict portion of the meeting, and then there's a break in between where we get an opportunity to fellowship, and then there's And then the panel does their thing. So we were in the break portion of things, and this guy comes up and he says, "Hey, man, you ever see these chips? 30, 60, 90-day chips? Not the metal chips. We can't have metal." He said, "These look like poker chips." I said, "Yeah, I've seen them." He said, "Well, you think you can find out where we can get some, how much they cost?" I'm like, "Sure I can, but... Donnie, you've got 12 years sober. Why do you need a 60-day chip?" He said, "Oh, no, man, it's not for me." He said, "There's a whole cell block full of guys here who have alcoholism and problems other than alcoholism. They're bipolar and manic depressive and schizophrenic, and they won't let them out to come to this meeting. So what we've started doing is we're taking meetings into them because that's how we do RH&I work, man. We got them those chips." And every once in a while, one of those guys gets to feeling better and gets out to the big meeting. You know, "Hey, man, check it out. Got my chip. 90 days. So when I had 15 years sober, I had injured myself on the job I was working, and a job I thought I'd be on forever because it was a great job. Wonderful company, took good care of me. But I was out for a year, and when it came time to go back, I realized I wasn't going back. And I wanted to get scared because, you know, those old thoughts started crowding back in. Geez, I'm an ex-con with no formal education, and what am I going to do? And I just couldn't find it in myself to be nervous, you know, because I knew I was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew somehow it was going to be all right. And about that time, the chairperson from Intergroup approached me and said, "Hey, man, we need a new manager at Central Office. You think you might like that job?" I'm like, "Yeah." So for 11 years, I did that. I ran Central Office in Santa Barbara for the 23rd District, and it was a great job. It was a wonderful job. And I encourage all of you who, I know you have a central office in Exeter that Bob runs, and you could probably use some help down there. If nothing else, you could go down and bug him with your opinions, you know, about, because you got to understand, this poor guy's working for every sober alcoholic in this district, and that's not an easy thing to do. It really isn't. To keep those doors open, to deal with all the different personalities. I can talk about this stuff now because I'm not running our central office anymore, you know. But I'm supportive of the people that do and the services that are provided there. And if you, you know, this guy came up recently and asked me to sponsor him, and I asked him how long he'd been sober. He said 2 years. I asked him about a particular book, if he had it. No, I said, "Well, you can get it at Central Office." And he said, "Where is that?" And it scared me. It's like, you're sober 2 years and you don't know where your Central Office is? You know, you need to get down there. You know, it's, I don't know about the office here, but I have a feeling it's like most of them I've been in. And it's a place where you can be safe. It's a place where you can be comfortable. It's a place where you can sit around and shoot the bull a little, talk about the things that happy talk, the language of the heart that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a vital, vital service. Without it, people don't know how to get to meetings. Without it, the literature's not available. So I'm a big supporter, if you haven't figured that out, of Central Office. Trying to think what else maybe you can identify with. I had hepatitis C. I know there's usually a few people in the room that have had hepatitis C or have it. I went through the treatment for it. I went through it twice, and the second time it took. Finished the treatment about 9 years ago now, and they still can't detect any virus in my blood, so they're calling it a cure, a success. I wasn't feeling good for quite a while, so that was nice to get that taken care of. A couple of years ago, I had some other health issues and spent quite a bit of time in the hospital. And when I took a good look at it, I thought, you know, I guess I wasn't bulletproof after all. You know, I did a lot of things to my body that it's like, I was going to live forever. So it's all bonus time that I'm on. But I made a decision that I wanted to retire from Central Office. I had some other things I wanted to do. My father passed away, and he was sick there towards the end of his life. He lived to be 90, and I got to spend a lot of time with him, and that was one of those relationships that got healed through the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was able to make my amends to him. And there was a period of time where we didn't speak to each other for 15 years. So, you know, I got to get straight with that. So my wife said, well, if you're going to retire, you better find something to get you out of the house or we're going to have trouble. And I said, well, I'll just keep doing what I've always, you know, I'll go to places and speak, and I'll go to my meetings, and you know, I'll play a little golf. No, you've got to find something to do. She knows me, you know. So she said, why don't you go up to City College and take some classes? You've always talked about wanting to be an actor, and they've got classes for that up there. And I had been involved with a little theater earlier, and much earlier in my life. And so I went up to City College and I signed up for a class. And truthfully, it scared me because I'd never really been to school. But I found something out. If you if you're in school and you go to class like you're supposed to, and you pay attention, and you participate, and you do the work that they ask you to do, you get good grades. I never really knew that. It hadn't been in my experience, you know. It was always something I was trying to get out of. I quit school in the ninth grade and never went back. So I love City College. You know, I'm having so much fun up there. And I started taking these acting classes. And through that involvement, I got cast in some plays. We did 12 Angry Men, if you know that one. I said, what's it about? They said, being on a jury. I said, well, I've got a lot more experience with being the guy in the orange jumpsuit, but yeah, I'll give it a shot. So that's evolved into something that, you know, I have a profession. My profession is I'm retired. And I like it like that. But I have this little thing that I do on the side sometimes where I get to involve myself in these theatrical activities, and I'm having a lot of fun with it in town and at school. Next month we start rehearsal on the play Bill W. and Dr. Bob. We'll be at the Center Stage Theater from in Santa Barbara in the Paseo Nuevo from April 23rd through May 2nd. Come and see us. It's a small theater, 120 seats, so I think we're going to have a good turnout, so buy your tickets early, you know. I'm so looking forward to doing this play. I saw it done about 15 years ago. I knew the script was out there. And then I saw it done again about 6 months ago in Hollywood. And I got a hold of the Samuel French, and they're the ones that handle the licensing for that sort of thing. And we got the rights to the script. And I've got a great cast that I'm going to be working with. Got a woman who's I'm working with a bunch of old pros, so I'm going to be the weak link in the chain, but I'm the producer, so they have to listen to me. But I've got a director, and we're all in recovery, and it's such a fun project I'm looking forward to. And it's the story of the beginnings of Alcoholics Anonymous, of course. And anyway, if you get a chance, come down and see us. So that brings you up to now. You know, that's what I'm doing in my life, and that's how good my life is. I want to welcome anybody who's new and tell you that we're glad that you're here. We want you to know that you're welcome in this fellowship, that you're not alone anymore, that you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to. I believe that now because it's been my own experience. Thanks for listening this morning.